and welcome to the Minor Rex Podcast. I'm Angelo, and today I am joined by Charlie, Sarah, and Lynn. On this episode, we will be discussing the long-running science fiction franchise Star Trek. Since about 2016, around the time CBS, the company who owns Star Trek, launched their streaming service Paramount Plus, there has been a ton of new Star Trek media, such as Discovery, Lower Decks, and Picard, all of which you can rent from the library. But before we get into any of that, I thought I'd start off today's discussion with the following question. Now, obviously, since we're all here discussing Star Trek, we're all Trekkies to some degree. but how much of a Trekkie are you? Are you, like, well-versed in the fandom? Do you go to conventions?
Definitely. 100%.
No. No. I have it. It's all at home. I wasn't really a Trekkie until I got married, and then, well, it's contagious. I don't have to go to conventions because all the toys and merch are at my house.
You've got your own convention.
We do. It's ongoing.
Can I go to that convention?
Yes, but you can't borrow the socks. How's that?
The socks? Ooh.
We have original series socks in all of the different major...
like worn by the people?
No, like they're blue or red or yellow. No, that would be
worn by Leonard Nimoy.
And you wouldn't be able to borrow those either.
No. I don't know if I necessarily want to.
So these socks are from... I'm sorry, I'm talking about socks. These socks are from the 60s, 70s?
Yeah, they have that logo. Yeah.
Wild.
My parents always had the Star Trek ornaments on our Christmas tree. That was like my first little foray into Star Trek, because they would have it on the TV every so often. But I really didn't start getting into Star Trek until like undergrad of college. Then I started just obsessing over the characters and the relationships and smooching.
I was first aware of Star Trek when my sister and I were babysat by one of my mom's friends. They went to high school together, and we were probably 6, 7. It was the early mid-90s, and my mom's friend was really big into The Next Generation. Had like the figurines and coffee mugs, and you know, my sister and I were just like, why do they look so weird? And she's like, well, that's a Cardassian, and that's a Klingon, and that's a Ferengi. And we're like, what? So it seemed at first like the barrier to entry was, we would never understand this new universe. And then I started dating my girlfriend, Julie, and she said, you have to watch The Next Generation, otherwise we won't have anything to talk about. We won't have a shared frame of reference. And so after a couple seasons of that, I got hooked, and I am still hooked.
To answer my own question, I do feel like I would be a poser if I labeled myself a Trekkie, just because I don't have any of the merchandise, haven't gone to any of the conventions. I love The Next Generation and the original series. I know a lot of people have like a comfort show, like people will put on like The Office in the background while doing work. The Next Generation, that's my comfort show.
For me, that's Deep Space Nine and the original series. Both of those I will just watch over and over and over again, but for totally different reasons.
Okay, that's funny. For me, it's Deep Space Nine and Voyager.
I still need to watch Voyager all the way through, because what happens is my family will watch a show, usually a sci-fi show, and it'll be in the living room. And then I will be in the living room doing art, and then I slowly get sucked in because it's right off to the side, and then I only see parts of it, but I'm also really invested, so... And then they finish it without me, so I've missed a lot of things.
So I wanted to ask, of the new Star Trek media, which has been your favorite, and which do you recommend to the patrons?
I'm torn, because Discovery has Doug Jones in it. God bless that man. But Lower Decks is the most Trek to me, and that has been the most exciting and emotionally engaging of the three or four. There's also the animated kids show that I'm forgetting. Prodigy.
Yeah.
Netflix managed to save it, so we're getting more seasons of that too. So of the four, I would say Lower Decks has definitely really impressed me.
Well, I wanted to say, because that's a cartoon, and I feel like people don't give it a fair shot.
No.
But it's definitely the most like original Star Trek.
100%.
Of the newer series.
I keep telling my parents to watch it, but they won't, because it's a cartoon.
No, it's
get
amazing.
Out of here.
It's amazing. You know, I wonder if people who are reluctant to get into a cartoon, if Strange New Worlds might be a good, like, way to dip their toe into it, because there's so much humor, and then get to the crossover show and then be like, wait, who are these people? Oh, I right, guess I'll watch
the Lower crossover Death. Shows.
Yeah.
I'm far behind. Don't look at me.
It's brilliant.
I'm really a fan of the Strange New Worlds, the model, how it's not based on a full season arc the way Discovery is. So you can just kind of watch an episode at a time and it's you're not like strapped in for a full
I mean, Discovery
Klingon
was,
war.
Discovery had so much potential, but it felt like they were constantly using the action to drive the plot instead of the characters and like letting us get to know them. Like, you know, in all the other series, I know all the characters by name. I know like what their backstory is. Whereas like it was like season 3 or 4 and I'm like, who is that person? Like, I know they've been here since the beginning, but I don't remember their name. And that's a big fail.
Right. For me, I just started watching Discovery because it was not allowed in my home. My husband has very strong tastes about Star Trek. And he was like, no, I'm not going to watch it. You can't watch it. So I've been watching it on my own. It's dark.
Yeah.
And it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's sort of unrelentingly dark. And so, more so than any of the other...
Aside from, well, Picard's more
dark. I haven't watched Picard either because that's also not allowed in my home. I don't
the
know
first,
why.
That first season was...
Yeah.
Traumatized. I wasn't even like, I haven't even seen the whole thing, but I saw enough for the Borg torture to traumatize me.
I will say that, yeah, definitely season 1 of Picard and season 1 of Discovery are unfriendly in
it's
a way
weird.
That is sort of atypical for Star Trek. And I think that in those early parts of the season, they're kind of, it's a lot of backstory and a lot of like setting seeds that will later pay off. But yeah,
they're like HBOing it.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenes of like sudden, very dark violence that took it out of me. Yeah,
and like, the whole like incident with one of those characters, they kept showing it in every single recap. I'm like, bro, like stop! I didn't need to remember this every single episode.
I feel like Star Trek is definitely at its best when it sticks to that utopian vision.
Mm-hmm. Yes. 100%.
As much as I say that, I do feel like Picard is my favorite of the new stuff, but specifically season 3 of Picard. And I mean, I'm a TNG fanboy.
Don't spoil it. I haven't seen
it. And
now
I've heard that it's basically a loving callback.
Yes.
Yeah.
I liked season 2.
So
I thought it was really cool with the Borg Queen and like, what's her name? The blonde woman?
Oh, 709?
No, not 709. She.
Chapel. Nurse Chapel?
That's Strange New Worlds. it's the woman who basically has a thing with the Borg Queen. I don't know. I thought her and like her relationship with the Borg Queen and that whole development was awesome. Because we never get to see the Borg Queen as anything other than the villain that's like the big bad guy.
Yeah.
Whereas like she was an actual character interacting with people and like she has relationships with characters that are not Picard. Because she abducted him.
Yeah, each season of Picard feels like its own like self-contained movie, season 3 more so. If you're a TNG fan and you haven't seen anything else, you could easily jump to season 3.
Agreed.
And enjoy and understand everything.
Yeah.
Okay, then I feel like maybe that's what I'll do.
Yeah, it's sort of like fan service if you're deeply invested in the next generation characters.
Yeah.
Like the last season of Picard gives you the opportunity to have final moments with those characters. So, like, if you miss Riker and Troy, then you get some nice Riker and Troy.
Yeah.
And if you miss Picard and Riker, then they have a, you know, every permutation, every combination of characters has a nice little finale.
Big time. Yeah. It definitely feels like the movie they always wanted to make because I remember after TNG ended, there was like 4 movies that came out, and they all range from with First Contact to just like horrible with Nemesis. Nemesis was like the nail in the coffin for TNG.
Yeah, that's the one where you can sort of see everyone age out of their characters. Like Brent Spiner looks really weird in the Data makeup.
Yes.
They have to keep making up excuses why Data, a robot, is aging.
Yeah. And this is before they had that CGI face tracking where they could, like...
The de-aging.
De-age someone.
Yeah.
That might actually have worked.
That would have worked. Mm. It would have been pretty good. I know they did that for Luke Skywalker in the Mandalorian. That was the deep fake was impressive.
Yeah. I think in some of Picard, they've got some deep... de-aging... Which was pretty well done. It didn't distract, at least.
Cool. Now, see, that is what I appreciate so much about Lower Decks, mm. is that you get those, A, when they bring on voice actors to play recurring characters from other shows, because there's constant callbacks to other shows.
Yeah.
They give you those tastes. Like, you get to see, oh, now his name has just
Riker?
Left me. Riker.
Yeah, Riker was
in
there.
In the Riker pose.
It was right? So funny. And Boimler does the Riker pose, too. He's
and he,
Riker.
Right? And he's, like, right there. It's, yeah, it's amazing.
I love one of my favorite parts, because, you know, I'm a major shipper, and I love the relationships between characters, both spoken and unspoken, was that Boimler and what's her name? I'm forgetting what her name is.
Beckett.
Go to, it's kind of like a captain's convention.
Yes.
And like, they go to a bar and it ends up being a bar that Kirk and Spock used to go
yes.
to. And it's in the wood, it's etched Kirk X Spock.
Right.
And like, that was just like a subtle like hat tip to acknowledging everything that like, people have been reading into their relationship mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's like one of my favorite things about Star Trek is that the writing is so good mm-hmm. that relationships just kind of bloom in places that people didn't even plan.
Right.
Like in Deep Space Nine, you have Garak, who is like a Cardassian spy. And then you have Julian Bashir, who is a like super naive, like flirtatious doctor. And like the actors are fully like the writers weren't intending to make them have a relationship regardless right. of whether or not it was like friendship or romance, but the actors were so involved in it that they were like 100% I am in, to the point where the writers were like, we got to separate them, they're too close, like the they,
but
it looks
was
gay.
One of the most enjoyable 100%. Relationships of that show.
Yeah.
Ugh. And I wish they had, like, finished it off with them being in a relationship like everyone wanted. Or, like, finished off Bashir's arc in that he always wanted to be a, oh, what's, like, not an adventure doctor. What's it called? It's like a frontier doctor. And, like, Cardassia being destroyed would have been the perfect
ending. Yes, it
ending.
Would have been.
Like, even if he went there just to be friends with Garak, he would have.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
That he would have done that in his character. That just makes so much sense. But I digress. I could go on forever.
But now, okay, you
yeah.
talked about the bar, and that's from an episode in Lower Decks called An Embarrassment of Duplers, which is one of my favorites. Okay, and there are actually, if you slow it down, like we do in my house, to look around the bar, there are so many photographs and like relics
and memorabilia
from the original series all over the place.
There's an episode in Picard where they visit a museum of Starfleet and it's just like constant Easter eggs like
yeah.
for fans of the whole show. Yeah.
Well, both in Lower Decks, but I think also in Picard, Quarks is a like major franchise.
Mm,
so
yeah.
you see like little like Quarks bars all over the place, which I think is wonderful.
That is fabulous.
Yes.
That poor man, he tried so hard.
I mean, expansion is one of the rules of acquisition.
True.
It has to
That's
be.
Right.
And
right.
you know, his brother became the Grand Nagus. Like, he's gotta at least succeed with his business.
That was really, really a great thing
like,
to add in.
And like that's a good tie-in to the way Star Trek has really been a center slash like a driving force for social justice and like speaking about things that are really difficult to talk about in our society.
Yeah.
Like with that whole episode with Rom, Quark's brother, he forms a, it's not a union, but he does a, what is a,
yeah,
with the rats and the pickets. What is that called?
They strike.
Yeah, they
the
went on strike and then formed a union.
Girls? No. Dabo girls. The Dabo girls.
Yes. Dabo.
Damjot is a different game.
Yeah.
The Dabo girls. Yeah, that was awesome.
And then his mom comes into the picture and she's like the first like
she refuses
Ferengi.
To be naked. Yes.
Ugh. It's so relevant in our like capitalist culture that's obsessed
yes.
with worshiping money.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, from the very beginning, like Star Trek has been in a future where money doesn't exist and a lot of these kind of human problems that we have been resolved because we're trying to be nice with other planets and other species on other planets. I think that every iteration of Star Trek is kind of a reflection of what was around at the time.
Right.
And so, like, Gene Roddenberry wasn't perfect, wasn't a saint, and so there's still some, in the original series, there's some stuff that might not fly in the current time, but I think the moral arc of Trek bends towards social justice. I think
they
you're
try.
Right. Yeah.
They try. I mean, people are imperfect, and, like, I'm assuming he's a straight white guy,
yeah.
straight cis guy.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, for, what was it, 1960?
Yeah.
He tried. Like,
right.
they had the first
yes.
interracial kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and then eventually in Deep Space Nine, you had the first lesbian kiss on TV, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. And then now in Discovery, you had trans characters. Well, I mean, even in Deep Space Nine, you had Jadzia Dax, who
yes.
was technically trans.
Well, I was going to say, first episode of Next Generation, there is a man in the background just wearing, like, a female
that's
outfit.
Right. Oh, that's yeah. right. Oh, and then you have the non-binary character in The Next Generation
yeah,
that has a whole relationship with Riker.
Oh, yeah. I forgot there was an episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
They were a particular non-binary species.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, there was, like, three genders and the male and the female, and then the third gender was, like, for giving birth or for servant, like, class or something like that. It's always been, like, super fascinating, which is, like, drives me nuts that, like, Star Trek refuses to, like, let Kirk and Spock kiss or, like, refuses to, like, allow characters to be seen, like, that maybe they don't particularly care about, because it's always been about letting people do stuff and be who they are,
yeah.
and like, ah, oh, come
yes.
on, you're so close.
Right.
Yes. Well, and there's that element of exploration, and it's the exploration of space and of strange new worlds, but it's also, I mean, it is always reflecting back into society and into
yeah.
what's happening in interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's, like, I think that's probably my favorite part of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say that going along with that, my favorite part of Star Trek, which is very close, is that shows are typically a cast of, like, very smart people, like the smartest in society is because obviously there's like a captain of a Starfleet ship. It's smart, competent people solving bizarre scientific issues in smart, competent ways. And I just don't feel like that happens a lot in a lot of modern media. For example, like horror movies, like characters split up and do, like, you know, stupid things.
Like,
bro,
like,
why are you doing that? Yeah.
Right? Don't go down there.
Yeah.
Tribbles.
Another thing that Star Trek does so well is balancing all of these elements, because there's, I think from the very beginning, there's been lightheartedness and, like,
yes.
explicitly funny episodes.
Yes.
And then there have also been tragic episodes, episodes that are emotional. I think that the best episodes are ones that sort of start as kind of a joke and sort of make 100%. You laugh. And then
yes.
by the end, you're crying. And I think that Strange New Worlds has done that a couple times, including in the musical episode,
which was, by the way, the first ever.
First
which
Star Trek musical.
Awesome.
Yes.
It was the first Star Trek musical. It was
yes. Major hats off to Kay Hanley.
Please.
Yeah, it was really brilliant. I loved it. I can't say enough good things about Subspace Rhapsody. The title is amazing.
I need to memorize it. I don't know why I haven't already.
The soundtrack is available on Spotify.
It is, yeah.
Heck yeah.
I wanted to mention that. I'm sure there's probably at least one person listening who has never seen Star Trek before. And we kind of talked about, like, introducing friends to Trek. Have you tried to introduce friends to Star Trek? And if so, did you choose, like, a specific episode or series that you showed them?
I'm always telling people to, and they usually do so because they want to talk about it with me. But it's really hard because there's such a wide array of choices,
yeah.
and it really depends on the person.
Right.
It does. I will say, when my husband and I decided that we really needed to introduce the kids to Star Trek, this is the gimme. It's the movie. It's the one with the whales.
Interesting.
Because they're whales.
Although it's directed by Leonard Nimoy,
yes.
so it's better than the other three. Because he really understood Star Trek
yes.
in a way
well,
that
it
the
was other, funny.
It was funny, but I'm also, like, surprised because it's also they're slow movies.
It is a slow movie.
It was hard for me to, like, hold my attention, and, like, I love Star
Trek. Well,
and
they were a little older we wanted them to love it. We didn't want them to have it lost in the background noise of their childhood. So they were a little older, and Soren was a huge fan of, you know, animals. And then Sam really likes funny, so I'm like, this is the funniest. Now, Lower Decks, it brings together, like, everything.
Yeah.
A, we made them watch all, like, the whole, once they were into that, we watched all of the series up to, they haven't watched Voyager, and they haven't watched Picard.
Yeah.
But everything else up to there, they've
maybe
watched.
If I make my parents listen to this podcast,
right?
And they hear us talking about Lower Decks, they'll actually watch it and believe me.
I have laughed so much on that show.
Yes.
And I mean, honestly, if people like camp, that Strange New Worlds episode, Subspace Rhapsody, was so good. If you like musicals, if you like camp, that's wonderful. There's a... And there's, it's not just whimsical. I mean, there's real
it puts
meat
to
it.
Yeah, it puts the characters first in that Star Trek way. And all of their arcs are important. And it's a vital episode within the season. But it also works as a standalone.
Yes.
It's so good. Sobbing.
Did you have an answer, Charlie?
I do think that sometimes Trek series have a tough time getting started. Like,
yeah.
I think there's some dodgy moments in the first season of Next Generation and Deep Space. Basically, until Riker and Sisko get beards, that's when it starts getting cooking.
And the beards are what really did it.
It does help.
Well, it's so funny because, like, the writers and the actors really determine the quality of the show. Hmm. And, I mean, all the older Star Treks are enjoyable in one way or another. But, like, with Deep Space Nine, they had a great time behind the scenes. And they talk about that in a lot of the documentaries on like Amazon Prime, how they loved it. They were all best friends. The writers were totally like down. There was no fighting. Whereas in Voyager, I think, is it Voyager? Voyager's the one with Janeway, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. They had a lot of bickering on that cast.
Oh,
and that's why there was a lot of like fighting between Janeway and Seven of Nine, or the actors who played them, because they brought in Seven of Nine to be like a sexualized female figure and taking away from Janeway as like a powerful female lead / captain. Just lots of little things that while they were filming at the same time, they were, the Voyager cast have said that they were really jealous of the Deep Space Nine cast because they had so much fun and were just able to do not whatever they wanted, but they enjoyed it.
I feel like looking back, when you say that, I didn't know that. And when I look back, I remember the first like two episodes of Deep Space Nine going, it's not going to stay this stiff.
Yeah.
Like they seem really stiff because I didn't start watching at the beginning. I started somewhere in the middle and I'm like, I love this show so much.
They had
They're a rough so fun.
First 10 episodes.
And then the first few episodes were very,
big time. TNG, same issue. Kind of a notorious first two seasons. And there was a lot of, I wouldn't say bickering among the cast. There was some of that, but it was mostly...
mostly Patrick.
it was mostly Patrick Stewart. Initially, at first, he warmed up to Star Trek. He's like a Shakespearean actor. I think he thought it was below him. There was like a lot of complaints from Yara's actress. And, oh my God, she's my favorite character on the show.
Beverly
Crusher. Mm. That they didn't feel like they were being utilized enough. So the first two seasons, 100%. There was a lot of shifting of characters. Beverly Crusher is gone from, I think, the third season.
Third season, I'm pretty sure.
But then she comes back and becomes a much more permanent role.
They really didn't do a good job with utilizing their female actors in the beginning. And even then, I know the woman who played Jadzia Dax, I'm forgetting her name right now, she quit. That's why in the last season of Deep Space Nine, you have a completely different Dax, and they killed off her character because she was facing like sexual harassment on set, and it was, she just couldn't deal with it anymore. And it's sad because her character was like awesome. Like, she's honestly the character I see myself in the most.
I remember being, I was like, did she just
just kill her off? What?
Just die? How could she die?
Literally.
Well, spoilers.
Sorry.
Spoilers.
For a 30-year-old show. My answer to my question of my go-to episode for introducing friends, and this is going to sound oddly specific, it's TNG Season 5, Episode 18. It's Cause and Effect. And it's the episode where basically the Enterprise ship gets caught in a time loop, where at the end of the time loop, the ship explodes. But that explosion, and I don't know the science behind it, causes the time loop, and they go back to the beginning.
Some timey-timey.
And yeah. As the time loops progress and progress, all the characters keep experiencing deja vu. Mm. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, Beverly Crusher is my favorite character on the show. It's a very Beverly-centric episode. Yes. She's kind of the one that solves it. And going back to the whole, like, I love it when it's smart people solving problems intelligently. Yes. This is, like, that show that encapsulates that the most, I feel. And it's surprisingly a good episode to introduce because you don't need to know the backstory to all these characters. It becomes obvious what everyone's role is in solving the mystery.
Yeah. Yeah,
so. That is a great, great episode. Yeah. Really enjoy that one.
I'm still thinking about what I would... I would say Tribbles for the original series. Trouble with Tribbles, because
that's a good one.
That just makes me laugh.
It is a good one, and like, it's accessible.
The ones
it's
that
funny.
Make me laugh are my favorite.
Mm. That's a good one for original series, because original series is, like, you know, cheesy and archaic.
Yeah.
I feel like that won't fly over well with a lot of, like, modern viewers. Yeah. Tribbles is a good, like, this is what that show is like. Yeah.
I think Amazon Prime has, like, a whole, like, chunk of the series just, like, the best of the original series, and it's just like a season of like maybe 30 episodes out of all three seasons, which I think that would probably be a good recommendation. But for Deep Space Nine, I think any of the Ferengi centric episodes, they're so funny.
They
with like Quark and Odo's dynamic, there's no way you can't fall in love with it. Like, it's just so funny.
Or another episode I would recommend to maybe a first timer, the Deep Space Nine past tense two-parter, where they go down to San Francisco during these Bell riots. I think that might be one of the most direct, because it takes place on Earth, and it's sort of...
During now, like, technically right now.
Yeah, I think it was, like, set in 2012 or something, which
I thought it was 2020.
Was it 2020?
I feel like it might be.
Oh, I've got the wiki entry up. September 2024, so watch out.
Oh, wow. Oh, God.
Okay, I just have to share something from... It's a quote from the episode in Strange New Worlds, Those Old Scientists, where, okay, not to be ungrateful, but if you had just waited one more second, we wouldn't be stuck here. Do you know how worried I was? You disappeared in a vortex while I was in charge. For all I knew, you were dead or stuck in a dystopian San Francisco in the middle of a riot. Right, and then we have to watch that episode now.
Right. There's so many times during Lower Decks I'll, like, point at the screen. And
right, and then you're like, okay, well, I guess we're watching that next.
Right. The fact that all of the Trek series are so interconnected and that they reference one another and they reference characters and planets and events that all take place more or less within the same timeline, that might be something that puts new viewers at an arm's length. But I think that once you're into it, it strengthens that thread. Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, it makes Lower Decks that much more funny when you get the references. It makes when Discovery brings something from the original series in.
Yes.
Like it
Spock.
Exactly. When Spock shows up, it's...
I love it. Oh, no. No, she hasn't seen it.
I haven't
seen
it yet, but it's okay.
Well, the main character is Spock's sister, so that's not a spoiler.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay, Michael Burnham.
I did know that.
Okay, thank God. I didn't ruin your life.
No, you didn't. I was just thinking about that. You're right. When you already love it and you already know it, it's that much more powerful.
Yeah.
When in Strange New Worlds, when La'an goes back in time with Kirk, it's so enjoyable to explore that and to know that you're looking at little boy Noonien Singh, you know, Khan, whatever. Yeah. It's really
also
interesting.
How dare they kill off Kirk? And how dare they let Spock age and, like, just be sad because his best friend is stuck in a time bubble? That's terrible. Cruel. I'm upset.
You really want these relationships to resolve, right?
They just let it.
I know, they just...
Why?
maybe they don't ship it like that, but they're besties. It's like if me and Jessica got separated forever and then they just left it like that. Because they, bye, Jess, you're in a time bubble and I'm just getting old because I'm a Vulcan. Like, sobbing.
Of course, if they hadn't left him in a time bubble, he would just be dead already.
But at least it,
there would be resolution.
There would be resolution.
All right, okay. All right, that's fair.
Meanwhile, he's just sad and alone, falls through a time portal, whatever you call, rip in time, and goes to a different dimension, then meets a younger Kirk and has to, like, deal with that ramifications.
Okay, there are a few spoilers there, I feel.
What's wrong with you? Why haven't you seen it? No, it's okay.
I will soon. I have to watch it by myself. My husband won't watch Voyager or Picard. So,
well, no, this is from, like, the, God, what are the new Star Trek movies?
No, the J.J. Abrams.
With J.J. Abrams.
I've seen all those.
You have? You forgot?
Apparently I forget.
Yeah, literally, young Spock.
Well, I haven't seen those.
Oh, well, young Spock gets so mad at young Kirk that he spaces him on a snow planet, and somewhere in a cave, he meets old Spock. And
alternate dimension or original universe Spock as well.
Right? Oh yeah, original universe Spock is old Spock.
Played by Leonard Nimoy.
Played by Leonard Nimoy.
No, I remember this. Yeah. I didn't remember the ramifications of it. I remember it happening. I don't remember what it was about.
Out of curiosity, do you think you would recommend that movie to a newcomer?
Weirdly enough, I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
I've read it a million times via fan fiction.
Interesting.
Don't look at me.
You have to like that type of action film. Like, if you like J.J. Abrams' films, they're fun.
Weirdly, I have an issue with their acting.
That's the problem with the movie, is that it doesn't represent Star Trek that well, because it is, like, a straight-up action movie. You know, with explosions.
And the redesign of the sets. Not so much the outer parts of the ships. Sure, those are fun, but the sets are weird.
They're more futurified.
And they're not, yes, and everything's lit up funny, and you can't get from point A to point B ever.
See, well, that's why I love fan fiction so much, because the people who are writing know the characters in the universe so well that I could watch, quote-unquote, the movie via, like, basically rewriting it in, like, a story, a 50-chapter fan fiction, and, like, I know the whole thing, but I know it the better way because they end up kissing in the end.
What? I would not have hated that in that particular set of movies, because their chemistry was really good in those. That is one thing I did like about the J.J. Abrams.
What was the Spock? I'm forgetting his actor. It's
Zachary
Quinto.
Yeah,
he's gay. He's a gay man. Like, he played Spock gay.
I do not know the sexuality of the
character. Strange New Worlds, Kirk is bi.
I could definitely see where,
like, yes.
Probably Polly.
Oh yeah, Polly.
Aliens.
Bi, like, it's the future. It's the future. That's the problem.
Yeah. Lynn, real quick, you brought up the set design of in the movie, how it's too bright. One of my biggest problems with modern Star Trek is that the sets for ships are too dark.
Too dark.
Okay,
yes,
that is also 100%. True. But in the films, it was always like
shaking.
Everything was always bright through glass.
Seizure warning.
Yeah, there was a bit of that, and it was just, it never felt like they were on a Star Trek ship.
Totally.
So I was like, well, that's great. I had to rely totally on the characters. And they were fun, but there was also a lot of new nuance brought to them.
All Star Trek ships should have carpet.
Right?
Yes, 100%.
Like the Enterprise.
Okay, now, in Strange New Worlds, they don't have carpet, but they couldn't have danced if they had, had
it's carpet. It's true. You're not
and
wrong.
And dancing down those hallways, that was pretty awesome. So, I don't know. I'm okay with that.
That's a good trade-off.
Yeah, that is a good trade-off.
The ship flips over and you gotta hold on to something. That slippery floor is not gonna do jack shit. They're like, oh, here we go. Down the hallway. Goodbye.
So, we talked a lot about what we would introduce to Star Trek newcomers, but I wanted to know, let's say that you had someone that has seen all of Star Trek. What is a non-Star Trek science fiction TV or movie you'd recommend to someone that's really into Star Trek?
Well, it's not a movie or TV, but the video game Mass Effect
is one of the closest comparisons, I would say, to Star Trek.
Absolutely.
It's like a three-game series for the original trilogy, and then there's a fourth extra series in the future called Mass Effect Andromeda with completely separate characters because they're in a totally different galaxy. But the amount of depth and character development and interpersonal relationships combined with space-related drama is very much... It was my precursor to Star Trek, honest to God. Like, and now that I'm a Star Trek fan, I would say I love Star Trek more, but I started off with Mass Effect, and, like, that was my thing. That was, like, the thing I was obsessed with for all the same reasons.
So shortly after I sort of plunged headfirst into the Trek world, I also started watching the rebooted Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So everything, the Chris Eccleston and David Tennant and Matt Smith years. And I found a lot of parallels. I think that it does a really good job of world building and of balancing the silly and serious and...
Downright terrifying.
And downright terrifying. And also of smartly written characters that interact in interesting ways and not being shy about using jargon and,
right.
and just totally off the wall space time.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yes.
That sort of thing. It's like... Go with it. Believe it.
Yeah, yeah, I would have to agree with that. I hate that. Also, I would say, this is a book, but Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir brings together that human ingenuity and heroics with, you know, a first contact that is brilliant and... science, and it's exciting, it's cinematic, it has a really cool, well thought out alien civilization in it. Yeah, so Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, that would be
and
my...
You have just made me remember my other recommendation, which would be The Wayfarers Quadrilogy by Becky Chambers. The book title that starts it off is The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet. Oh, it's incredible. I think I'm going to reread the series forever and ever and ever and ever and ever because it's so very much the same qualities of Star Trek that we really love. So can't recommend that enough myself.
My recommendation is also a first contact narrative. It's a movie from 2016 called Arrival.
Oh, I love
by
that movie.
The director, I believe it's pronounced Denis Villeneuve. And he's done recently the Dune Part 1 movie and Blade Runner 2049, I think it is.
I think so.
But... Arrival is another case of basically aliens land and they speak a language that is just like unlike anything in like human civilization. Mm. So they hire a philologist, someone who studies languages, and basically have her try to communicate. And they go through all the science of like when you meet another civilization, what's like the words you start to teach them, like from your language and what
right.
do you, yeah. It's like the most Star Trek thing I've seen that's not Star Trek.
So, yeah. Nice. It was very another situation where it's smart people solving problems.
And positive and hopeful
yes.
and not like, oh, the aliens are coming, yeah. but they're going to completely wreck us and yes. give us the whole colonization right back at you.
Right. I will say, okay, so if you've got somebody who is a fan who is interested in branching out within the Star Trek world, I would say Red Shirts... by John Scalzi is a book that is really cool, really funny, and the audiobook is narrated by Will Wheaton.
Oh.
And it's about, well, red shirts.
Red shirt.
So it's but it's clever. It's not just an adventure set in the Star Trek world, it's also set in the making of Star Trek world. So it's pretty cool. It's not a new book, but it's worth a read.
Not definitely. To mention all of the Star Trek novels that exist.
Oh, yes.
Like, are those good?
Some of them are good. I mean, a novel called Killing Time.
Yes.
And this novel is so hard to find in the first edition because it was too gay for the publication. They did not like the fact that she wrote them having such an... I wouldn't even say it wasn't like it was sexually explicit, but it was such a, like an intimate relationship beyond what people expected from them, at least from like the director point of view. I'm not sure who, but fans of Star Trek are constantly looking for the original edition because they actually pulled it and rewrote it to make it less gay.
Yay!
So that's like one of my dreams is to find a copy of Killing Time.
That's cool.
And like among the other ones that are like super popular and well written, because they do, some of them do hold up. They really do.
I'm just so happy that there's so much more. Like I feel like, to go back to your initial question, I feel like I'm a pretty decent Trekkie, but then I realize I haven't seen like any original series or Voyager or Enterprise or any of the movies or read any of the books, and now I feel like there's just so
it's
much more to go.
Who can?
There's too much, but never too much.
Never too much.
And I will say I wouldn't be able to have gotten as far as I have without the assistance of the Memory Alpha Wiki, which is
really cool.
Yes, it's a fan-made wiki online where you can sort of see all of the connections between various franchises, and yeah, it's just massively cross-referenced. Like, if you're interested in any episode that references waffles, there's an entire page about waffles.
That's cool.
What's the little robot's name? Peanut Hamper.
Peanut Hamper!
Yeah, we're not going to tell you who Peanut Hamper is, but you got to go use the wiki and look up Peanut Hamper. A real character. Not even lying.
All right.
Love it.
Well, go watch Star Trek. Go find Peanut Hamper.
Read some fan fiction.
if you see us at the library, tell us what you thought of Star Trek. And live long and prosper.